Yo, what's up? This is Radio Free Nintendo, episode 88.
And oh, God.
Here with your cool daddy-o host, Jonathan Metz.
Smooth.
Yeah. That's Greg Leahy here on the other line. Oh, he's coming in from Great Britain.
Indeed, I am.
The land of zombies and swords and dragons.
Well, not right now.
Queens. gold doubloons. You're also hearing the gentle, waterfall-like laughter of James Jones, the podcast editor. James, how are you tonight?
I'm doing okay.
That's very good to hear. We also have John Lindemann returning to the show. Hello, what, John.
What's up, ladies?
Yeah.
I just blew you a kiss. I don't know if you could hear it, but I got some sweet loving for you tonight. Podcast style.
So we like to start the show with something we call new business. James, I think you're up first, man.
All right. Well, I'm going to stop talking about anything I've talked about in previous episodes just to bring in some new material.
Just to kick it up a notch.
That's right. I got my second review copy of a game this week. It is the absolutely wonderfully named Dungeon Explorer Warriors of the Lost Arts.
That tells me everything I need to know about it.
Pretty much. Now, I'm going to ask, we're going to have a little pop quiz right now. In a game called Dungeon Explorer, what does one speculate you do?
Kill birds.
Yes, actually. That does happen. Anybody else want to make any guesses?
It better.
I think it's a sports title.
Yes, it is. There's a lovely racquetball minigame in the middle of it.
Well, let me
Refrigerator Perry was well known for his spelunking flair.
Before I go out on a limb and predict what this is about, I just want to ask, is it an AO game?
No, it's not, unfortunately.
Right, it's probably not,
AO.
It's probably not
Damn
what
it.
I'm thinking of then.
A lot of metaphors there. A lot of metaphors.
God. Does one explore dungeons in it at all?
From time to time, yes, a dungeon does come up for you to explore.
Oh, now, how terribly exciting. Exotic, I dare say.
I know. But now, as generic as this title sounds, it actually manages to be more generic while you play it.
Ooh,
in
wow.
fact, in fact, the most that's actually just stood out in this game was the fact that when I opened it, it smelled of paint thinner.
Nice, wow.
It's which
maybe
is some sort
of the old brain cells so you won't notice how crappy it is.
Well, it's not crappy per se, because at least it was crappy. It would lose some of that generic quality.
Right,
it's
okay.
It is just so generic that it literally feels like I'm playing every dungeon crawler that's ever been created, just sort of mashed into a DS card that happens to smell a little bit of turpentine.
Now, is it by Hudson like the original Dungeon Explorer?
It is.
Is a sequel?
Yes.
Well, in fact, there's two Dungeon Explorer games that came out, one for the DS and one for the PSP. They are, in fact, different, completely unrelated games. For whatever reason. Hudson.
Well, the,
I mean,
the original
Hudson.
Game was on TurboGrafx 16 and is actually
right.
on the Virtual Console.
Mm.
Oh,
and
is
I
this
was strong...
the first-person thing?
No.
Yes.
Like the first-person co-op
yeah.
RPG?
Yes, it is that first-person dual-screen adventure game.
Aha!
Yes.
What?
It's an old-school one. Way
oh,
back
okay.
in the days of TurboGrafx 16.
Oh, okay. I was just saying the thing that I have, which is not.
No.
The DS the DS game is all isometric, over-the-shoulder crap, you know, standard stuff. And, in fact, the only thing that... Well, it does actually... I was able to go online with it yesterday for the first time. And
it's online?
Yeah, it is actually.
This is key information.
It's a moderately entertaining online experience if you can get past the fact you're communicating with like 8 pre-scripted words like exit with the question mark, follow, go, yes, and there's another question I can't remember. However,
so there's
are
there other people out there playing it?
It took about 8 minutes to connect to a game.
That's exactly what I heard.
Yeah.
But I did have two other players. One was about the same level as me, and one was 20 levels below us and constantly getting us killed. But I was hoping that maybe there would be some matchmaking here, but, you know, not really, no. So, you know, it's essentially you just go through this pyramid that's at the central point of the game when you're playing multiplayer. And you can go in there single player, but you will die. You go through 5 levels, and if you get through all 5 levels, there's this like system for divvying up the loot you got, which is essentially a lottery system, and you earn essentially drawings based on what you accomplished while going through there.
You earn lottery. You like earn lottery tickets. Mm. Is that what you're saying?
Right, and then after the first every 5 levels, there's a boss, and after that boss, you say, all right. List of items that were collected comes up, and you say, I want this one, this one, this one, this one, until you've exhausted all your picks. And then there's a drawing, and you may or may not get those items. But somehow or another, the hanger-on, like level 13, managed to get every item he wanted, and everybody else got nothing.
Oh, inequitable.
Son of a bitch.
That kind of thing sort of happens at the end of a level in Crystal Chronicles on GameCube, doesn't it? If I remember correctly.
I think Crystal Chronicles gives picks, though. I don't think there's a lottery.
But you get... Well, there's, like, all these items, and then you get picks based on, like, how well you did and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's a little better system. So would you say this game, I mean, it essentially plays like Diablo or whatever generic dungeon hack from Japan?
I would say the best analogy is Golden Axe. I'm not Golden
what?
Axe. What? Why did I say Golden Axe? Gauntlet.
Gauntlet?
Yeah. Especially like Gauntlet 64 because it's got that isometric perspective on it.
So it's action-based, not like an RPG.
Well, there is RPG progression to your statistics. So as you level up, you can assign your points based on what you want. There are classes and things, but really all that matters is if you can press the A button enough while running around in circles and not dying.
You know, I never thought about it, but stuff like Diablo, it really does have a lot in common with Gauntlet.
Yeah.
I mean, the combat's not complicated. In Diablo, you just click on shit over and over.
Well, you think that they could do a Diablo on the DS, you know, use the touchscreen.
Oh, they could.
Well, this isn't anything like that, because this game at no point acknowledges the touchscreen ever existing. Not even when you're entering your name does it acknowledge the touchscreen.
Oh, nice. Real.
That's kind of refreshing, I think.
I pulled out the stylus, and I'm, like, pressing on letters, and nothing's happening, and I'm getting frustrated. Then I go through the manual. Stylus is never even mentioned. I was
God. How is that refreshing, right, Johnny? It just sounds lazy to me. I mean, at least make it easier to enter stuff with the stylus.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the interface goes, yeah. But not relying on it for the gameplay, I kind of like that. Because
yeah,
I think it's just shoehorned into a lot of games that it shouldn't be. And it was especially early in the DS.
Yeah,
they were just putting touchscreen stuff in there. I mean,
Dawn of Sorrow.
It sounds like the kind of game where you don't have to blow on the microphone to do anything.
I wish it did, because the it would make the game a lot less boring. The inventory system is kind of whacked out, too. There's essentially a list of items you have, and it's 3 across and 3 down. So, like, the bottom row is 3 spells you can attach from your repertoire. And then the top 2 rows are items, and you can assign items to those places. Then you have to hold the R button and index through with the D-pad to pick which item you want to be assigned to a button on that list. So B, X, and Y. B gets one row, X gets one row, Y gets one row, and then you pick them with the D-pad as you move it around holding the R trigger while everything's trying to freaking kill you.
It doesn't pause?
No, it doesn't.
Okay. Have you played anything better than Dungeon Explorer?
Not anything new. Same stuff as before.
Okay. Cool.
One point about Dungeon Explorer, though, there's a lock-on system that does absolutely nothing.
Okay, a lock-on system in an isometric game.
And
that's kind of strange. Actually, Landstalker could have used that.
You get a partner robot who manages to do nothing in the levels and then runs into the boss until he dies when you get to boss battles.
So does that make it easier?
No.
Wait, until the boss dies or until the robot dies?
Until the robot dies.
How do robots die?
They blow up. But the game constantly forces you to buy new ones because you have to use them to solve puzzles while it goes and gets itself killed. It just seems like a way to bleed the money from you. I've actually walked into boss battles and stood behind pillars until the robot was dead because he was getting in the way.
Wow.
Like, yeah,
that's
fuck
awesome.
You, man. You go die. I'll just wait.
Okay. Well, I'm up next, and I'll be pretty quick. I've mainly played some Scourge this week, Scourge Hive on DS, and I'm up to the last boss now. I've played it two or three times, and I keep getting killed, so I gotta plow on through it. Hopefully I'm gonna finish that tonight or tomorrow, but yeah, overall, I still like the game. I do recommend, especially if you can find it for cheap like I did. And the bosses are all very interesting, and especially the last boss is quite cool and quite difficult. The other thing I've been playing is I traded in No More Heroes, because I beat it, and I didn't have any reason to play through it again, I don't think. And so I got Professor Layton.
Oh, nice.
And the Curious Village. Yeah, and I haven't played it a ton yet, maybe an hour. Played it while watching the Oscars, and I guess the... So far, the main points I like are that you can click around on the maps and find secret coins, because I get really obsessive over little details like that. I like the fact that there are no time limits on any of the puzzles, which is just it's so great for a portable game, because like you can read it and you start thinking about it, and then something distracts you and you can stop playing the game for a minute and not have to worry about it. That's pretty cool. And so far, the puzzles are surprisingly challenging, I think. Mm. I did the one with the digital clock. You guys know what I'm talking about?
No, sadly not.
Yeah.
I think it's sort of a secret puzzle, because you have to click on a certain place on a screen in order to get it. It's not one that you get handed by a character. You click on the clock tower, which is really early in the game. And it's much harder than the other puzzles that you've done up to that point. And that one took me several tries before I actually finally pulled out a piece of paper and started writing things down until I finally got it. But yeah, I think I'm going to like it. So that's my story. What about you, Lindemann?
I actually haven't done much gaming this week because I played a real-life game called Let's Buy a New Car. So pretty much the history of my car history is I've had this Nissan Pathfinder for, like, I think I bought it in, like, 2001. It was a 97, so I was getting up about 11 years of age. So, you know, I was thinking, I'm an SUV guy, right? So I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to go out, maybe I'll get a Hummer H2, but couldn't afford that. So I scaled it back a bit, and I'm like, maybe I'll get, like, a Toyota FJ Cruiser, kind of cool. But then I actually looked at, like, you know, my bank account, how much debt I have, and I scaled that back, and I got myself a little Toyota Prius. So that's how you just kind of move down the scale there, down back into
reality. You went from the Hummer to the Prius.
I went from a Hummer H2 all the way down to the Prius. It's like I'm from...
You must be one of the first people that have gone that far.
I think so. That's cool. That's the thing. I don't really know what to tell people because I've been kind of hyping this, man, yeah, I'm going to get an H2. I'm going to get a Cruiser or something like that. I've been hyping up like SUV, SUV, SUV. And they're going to be like, dude, what, a Prius? Are you serious? You know?
Just be like, gotcha.
Yeah, gotcha. But, you know, I'm like, I'm kind of like the anti-tree hugger, so I think it's incredibly humorous that I actually have a Prius, which is like the greenest car on the planet.
You've been converted.
Are you now walking around with your head up your ass?
No, I'm not. See, that's the thing, though. Like,
is there a cloud forming over Atlanta?
That's the thing. I really bought it. I didn't really so much buy it for the environment stuff, because obviously if I want a Hummer H2, ideally, I don't really care about the environment. But yep. I mean, it's going to be
the American
nice
spirit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's going to be nice not paying for gas, though. So I've just been I've been doing that all weekend. Now I'm trying to get a better loan for it. So I've just been, you know, wasting my time on that. But hopefully I'll get back to some gaming this week once all that's out of the way.
Well, that was fascinating. Yeah. What about you, Greg?
What about me? I have been disappointingly deprived of new business this week because Leighton has not gotten to me yet, sadly.
You imported it?
Yeah, emails were exchanged, and yeah, still not on the way. I need my...
By the way, I'm still waiting for Geometry Wars from Steven.
Still waiting. Yeah.
I've been waiting for a month now for him to send
it.
And it's and it
Okay, well.
It's mutually beneficial for us. Mm-hmm. You know, I unlock the last galaxy, and he unlocks the last galaxy.
Sure.
But he just can't be bothered. I mean, you know, he's more concerned with things like GDC and
yeah, these piffling
like
matters.
You know,
Smash Bros. Brawl. What a jerk!
Sorry to interrupt, Greg.
No, that's fine. So I need to cure my logic puzzle deficiency syndrome, as Chris Kohler likes to call it. So I'm still really looking forward to that. I'm waiting on another package actually, which is a new condition copy of ActRaiser for the Super Famicom. Yes, I've had sort of trepidation about getting it on the PAL Virtual Console because it'll run slow on that. The SNES, the Super NES games are not particularly badly converted, I would say, but they still have speed issues, and I'm not sure
that
whether
sucks.
The European version of ActRaiser, I think, is easier by default. I think there is a more difficult level in there somewhere. I'm not sure whether it's unlockable or not. So, boxed copy from Japan. I thought I'll have to hop on that. So I'm looking forward to going back in time a little. My Super Famicom, which is almost old enough to drink over here, i.e., 18, it still works, still going strong. Although knowing my luck, it probably will just like blow up when I put ActRaiser in it or something.
And is this your first time playing
ActRaiser? It will be my first time playing ActRaiser, because when I was importing games back in the day, it kind of put me off the text element to it. Because at that point I was Japan only. Years later, I had an American converter for things like Link to the Past, and you know all the important games that featured text that was somehow important to play in the game. But when ActRaiser came out, because it came out very early in Japan, didn't it? It was
very early in America. As
yeah,
well.
It came
out
something
yeah.
ridiculous like 93 in Europe. I'm not kidding, but I could care less about that. So that at the time kind of that and the obscene expense of purchasing import games precluded me from playing it at the time. And then here we are with Virtual Console, and like, it's sort of similar to the Mega Man 2 situation. It's like, I mean, because some of them are quite good. They have the speed corrected for, like Super Mario Bros. 3 has borders, but that doesn't bother me that much with an NES game because it's quite low res. And the speed is corrected for. Super Metroid has the speed corrected for. And the TG16 games run fine. So I've been enjoying the Virtual Console, but things like Mega Man 2, ActRaiser, these big cherished games that you know I really want to play for the first time, and I'm not sure I want to do it with the 17.5% slower. So a reasonably priced as new box copy of ActRaiser had to go along with that. So I'm waiting. I'm in a tense sort of waiting mode at the minute for further business to discuss, unfortunately.
You're going to love ActRaiser.
Oh, I think
yeah, it's a great game.
I know, I've heard the soundtrack quite a lot over the years through Radio Trivia, just to plug it again. And
yeah,
I think it's actually come up like 7 times in Radio Trivia now.
Well,
probably, because it's one of my favorite games, and I used to host, and then I'm sure 2IP loves it.
It's very
well.
Much, it's quite different from Castlevania IV, which is the other kind of the other sort of trailblazer for the Super Famicom sound capabilities. It's a nice kind of complement to that, I think, because Castlevania IV has got so much kind of, it's quite sort of varied soundtrack.
Metal.
You know, it's sort of like jazzy at times.
Oh yeah, you know, there's some jazz and metal,
it's very kind of diverse, and you know the organs and the strings at the time were very effective. Whereas I think like ActRaiser, from what I've heard, obviously you would know better than I, seems like it's a bit more kind of a cohesive movie score kind of deal.
Yes.
So that'll be nice.
I'll go with that.
That kind of compliment, and it's a long-standing hole in my collection, really. So it's nice to finally resolve that.
That's why I made sure I picked it up as soon as it came on the Virtual Console, because it was always one of those games I'd never actually played it until I played it on Virtual Console. Like, it was one of those games where I wanted to, like, when I first saw it come out, I wanted to buy it, but I just never got around to buying it.
Sure.
Finally picked it up, and it's a great game, man. It's great.
Well, for the sake of those people listening who don't know, why don't you explain why these games are slower in Europe?
Well, the reason is basically that with the PAL versions, PAL, the format for displaying a picture on European televisions and various other territories around the world, they actually have a lower refresh rate. So as opposed to 60 hertz, which is the standard refresh rate for the NTSC thing, which is in Japan and America, it's 50 hertz. And what happens is, if you don't convert it with any kind of compensation for that, you simply downrate the speed of the game to fit the downrating of the refresh rate. So therefore, you go from 60 to 50, you get a 17.5% reduction in the speed of the game. It can be counted for quite easily. As far as, for instance, Rare always used to counter for it with their PAL releases. All the Donkey Kong Country.
Wonder why?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, really.
It seems like it is as simple as if you give a shit, it gets done. So yeah, it makes it all the more irksome that the problem was as pervasive as it was for as long as it was. And it's only really with the Wii, because even the GameCube had these problems with some games.
Really?
Yes, absolutely. Some of the games had the option to run in so-called PAL 60 hertz, which is really just like NTSC. It's because it goes back down to 480i, essentially. So games like Metroid Prime 2, they just didn't bother doing a PAL conversion. They just, because most tellies can accept both now. But with the Wii, it's just, for new Wii games, it is literally a case of you can either choose to run your Wii in PAL 50 hertz with the more lines greater resolution, or you can run it in NTSC resolution, but at full speed and with the option for progressive scan, and that's across the board. So it's only really with the Wii that it is literally completely irrelevant, apart from on the virtual console.
Ah.
Cool. Okay, well, that's the end of new business, and now we're going to take a short break, so stick around. We'll be right back. SNL! Okay, we're back with the community segment. James, what's going on in them phone?
Well, we've only got one thread to discuss this week, and that thread is in the console discussion, and it's called My Crazy Idea for Star Fox. And the thread is essentially people with their ideas of what needs to be done with the Star Fox franchise. The thread was created by user Walking Dead 2. And basically, he wants the system to have a complete restart, keep all the characters, but start the series off new and create a much more grand story that could eventually encompass many games, but give them a parachute in case it sucks and they can bail out of it.
Let me interrupt real quick. This business of keeping all the characters, bad idea.
Yeah,
when you say all,
you cut out about five of them.
When you say all the characters, do we mean like all the characters up to like Command, or do we mean the characters like, you know, the four team members, Andross and General Pepper or something?
I think he means the core characters. I don't think he wants us to keep, like, what was the name of that stupid Prince Tricky?
Tricky and Crystal, and then they added Slippy's girlfriend, who's probably just his sister.
Panther?
And there's like 20 or 25 characters.
Are you suggesting there's incest in the Star Fox franchise?
Definitely.
No, I'm suggesting that Slippy doesn't really have a girlfriend, and maybe he's asked someone to masquerade as such.
Oh, okay.
Well, why does it have to be as awful as his sister? Couldn't it just be a man in drag?
it could be. I don't know.
Yeah. A frog?
Frogs spontaneously generate anyway,
yeah,
so it doesn't matter.
Therefore, it's not really drag, is it? It's just,
it rains, they're frogs. That's the miracle of life.
Oh, God.
If Prince Tricky is ever in an R-Wing, I will stop buying the series. But that's beside the point.
Doesn't he, like, fly on the wing of your R-Wing? And
he goes in the back and then comes out of, like, a cargo container.
Oh, that's right.
And he, like, skips out so much that I want to whack him with that stupid staff every time I see him.
You know, someone was linking, I don't remember what the context was, but somebody was linking some screenshots of Star Fox Adventures the other day, and
it was the hotness thread, that's what it was.
Oh, yeah, and they were talking about Crystal being hot. Good grief. But anyway, I clicked on the link because someone had reported it. They were asking us to close down the thread. And I was just looking at the screenshots, and furry bizarreness aside, it just reminded me how absolutely gorgeous the graphics were in that game. I mean, it still is. I think it could be argued that it's the best-looking GameCube game. And it came out in 2002.
Yeah. Well, they spent forever just on fur graphics, or whatever they were calling it. What was it, fur physics?
Yeah, even without, well, I don't know, but even without the fur shading and stuff, it's completely gorgeous. It really is. It's amazing graphically. It's just too bad about everything else.
About it being utterly boring.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a bad game. It's just boring.
It really,
it's just really long and boring.
It really embodied everything that was wrong with Rare titles.
I agree with that.
Go collect a billion things. And
Baphmedads.
Baphmedads. The Earth loves Baphmedads. But, you know, that's sort of what this thread's about. You know, after that game, the series really hasn't fully recovered.
No.
Command?
I'd say it hasn't even really come close.
I find that puzzling in the sense that it really shouldn't have been that difficult to recover from. I mean, if you position the next game in the series correctly, it's pretty easy to just say, well, you know, that obviously was an anomaly. You know, it's just us putting it on a, you know, imposing the Star Fox license or whatever on top of a Rare game, and
sure,
you know,
literally,
it was an experiment in branching out Fox McCloud in his universe, and that's done, and now we're back to Star Fox and Star Fox. But because Assault, I think it was, wasn't it?
Yes.
The Namco co-developed game. I think they eventually settled on Assault because that still kind of mucked around with on foot stuff. Now
it actually made it worse.
Well, now it sort of becomes the sort of the Star Fox series has kind of meandered about with no idea what it wants to do. Rather than it's being kind of one game that was something that's not really Star Fox anyway,
it's become Star Fox the Hedgehog, basically.
It's just like, well, we don't know what we want to do with him. I mean, to be fair, I mean, I think Command is quite a good game for what it attempts to do. But because, again, that kind of toys with things in terms of the strategy elements and the fact that it's all range, there's no on-rails type missions of any significant extent, then, again, even though that's a pretty good game and I think might in some ways be viewed more favourably if we'd had a legitimate old-school Star Fox title on the GameCube and therefore people would be more tolerant of deviations from that formula on a handheld.
Right.
I think it all contributes to this narrative of the Star Fox series lacking an identity and being in some sort of crisis.
I think there are two problems with the Star Fox series right now, and they both started with adventures, but that doesn't mean that they're Rare's fault exactly.
Well, it's Nintendo's decision, for a start.
That was Miyamoto. Nintendo's responsibility. But I would say, number one, with Adventures, it moved to focus more on the story, whereas the story in 64 especially is, you know, there's obviously some things going on with the story, and it's very fascinating, especially with the ending and when your father comes back, it's got the Star Wars vibe that's very cool. But a lot of it, the story is very subdued. It's kind of fill in the blanks, use your imagination. And I think that's what people liked about it a lot. You know, it was one of those things that sort of hinted at a story, but it really was up to you to tell it yourself. And what happened in Adventures is that it became just this very blatant, straightforward, very long cutscenes with voice actors and blah, blah, blah. And to me, the Star Fox universe just wasn't that rich to begin with. I mean, it's just not – it doesn't lend itself that well to storytelling, especially when the story doesn't have anything to do with Star Fox, which is exactly what Adventures was. You know, it was a totally different game before they slapped Star Fox on it. So the second thing is it started this trend of farming out Star Fox to other developers.
Yes.
And so I don't think the problem with Assault – the Namco game, I don't think the problem is that it inherited a bunch of flaws from Adventures. I think the problem is it was made by Namco and they didn't really care about it very much.
But, you know, that was really baffling because the team that got it at Namco, at least initially, was the Ace Combat team.
Yeah.
I thought... Well,
yeah, I think that it was the Ace Combat B team.
Well, maybe it was just the Ace Combat narrative team.
It still kind of baffles you why you then have an emphasis on on-foot stuff, wouldn't it, given that?
It really is, and the on-foot stuff in that game was so goddamn awkward that, you know, you just felt like, just let me get back in the R-Wing. I can blow this level up and don't have to worry about walking into the core and setting a bomb and running away. I'll just drop a bomb on it.
And that game was shown at two E3s in a row, which is fairly unusual for Nintendo because usually they don't show a game at E3 until it's nearly finished. And the first time it was shown at E3, everybody said, guys, this is not working. this is really bad. I mean, we were kind of shocked at just how terrible it was. Because at least with Adventures, you could admire the aesthetics of it, the production values. In Armada, it was clear from the start it was a cheap game. I mean, just there wasn't nearly the production put into it. And there was Nintendo got a lot of feedback from us and everybody else who played it there and said, this on-foot stuff, the tank stuff, the graphics are really bad. And they actually delayed it at some point, and then they brought it again the next year, and it wasn't any better. In fact, the demo that they showed the second E3 was almost exactly the same.
And it's actually very close to the release game, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. It was essentially the same thing. And I was just left scratching my head. I couldn't understand it. I mean, at first they were telling us it was going to be like a multiplayer-focused game.
Yes, I remember.
And I don't think the final copy like had terrible multiplayer. I don't think anybody really played multiplayer in Star Fox Armada. The whole thing was just strange. Yeah, but I mean, I totally agree with the person Walking Dead 2 who started this thread. I mean, is that Star Fox needs like a Casino Royale / Batman Begins type of remake. And if they're gonna mess with the story, that's fine. Hopefully they'll reduce the story, you know, cut it down to the essentials and do something kind of iconic with it instead of getting all emo-y and you know, let's see how many weird characters we can add and stuff like that. But the story is really the least of my concerns. I'd like them to go back and not retread the same ground in terms of gameplay, but go back to the principles of the first couple of games and then expand from there, rather than going somewhere completely different and experimenting with a bunch of stuff over there that doesn't clearly relate back to what the series is founded on.
Well, you know, a lot of the conversation came up to what, in the thread at least, what the role of all range mode versus on rail should be. Because Walking Dead 2's premise is that he wants the game to really go back to the all on rails stuff with some all range mode. And later discussion comes to saying, well, the all range mode stuff didn't feel as special in Command because that's all there was.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, and I can understand that because in a way you can do a lot more cinematically with on rail stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
You can have a lot more moving set pieces like the tank, like on the tank level where you have to destroy the train. That wouldn't work. That wouldn't work in all range mode.
No.
Yeah, but the stuff in 64 that is all range is mostly very good, and it's kind of exciting when you get to one because it's a change of pace. It's different.
Well, I think as well,
and
I
you
mean,
can do these
kind
big
of,
giant battles and death
matches. Well, they're
matches
kind of focused on sort of dogfights, aren't they? With the Star Wolf team, and I think what would be nice about those is with a more fluid control system that the Wii could potentially offer. Because
the Command had a very good control
exactly,
system.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I think that's
shockingly good.
Because, but that's
really.
The thing. The Command was lovely and fluid. I thought the controls were absolutely fantastic, and I didn't have any problem with doing the barrel roll constantly either, like some people who reviewed the game did. But there wasn't enough of actually like having. There were a few times where you'd fight one major enemy that would be constantly pursuing you, and you had to continually like loop the loop and evade. And but it didn't really happen that often. Most of the time, you was kind of hunting down fairly brainless enemies.
Yeah,
and I just think that if you had that kind of dogfight emphasis in all range mode of Star Fox 64 with the kind of fluidity that you got from an enhanced control scheme in Command. That could be a really nice complement to a completely balls out on rail set of levels that just go for it.
Sure. Yeah, and I think there are even still other types of. If you look at, say, the Rogue Squadron series, pretty much all of those maps are so-called all range. Mm. I mean, that series owes a lot to Star Fox.
Yeah.
And most of those levels are essentially all range. And they're not all about deathmatching, and they're not all about shooting these little brainless enemies. They're about go here, do this, go here, do that. And I think it shows the potential for mission design that Star Fox really hasn't taken advantage of yet in these fully 3D levels.
Well, you know,
I think there's still a lot more you could do with that idea.
Sure.
So I'm not saying abandon all ye who enter the all-range design, but they need to do more with it, you know?
Well, you know, another post in the thread, which had a sort of similar idea by Aramac88, was they want the game to return to the on-rail stuff mostly, like 64. But as opposed to just, you know, you fly as Fox McCloud and then everybody else manages to fly around and engage in getting raped in some way that requires you to intervene. the game sort of splits, and you can play as different characters and have different story paths that go through different worlds and different paths, and they intertwine at certain event points.
Different paths is a pretty well embedded concept in Star Fox, so to tie it to characters would make sense in some way.
How about characters that play differently? Like they have different ships and they have different abilities. That would be pretty interesting to me.
Yeah, it just because his point was that you could return to the on rails and make a game that's longer than Star Fox 64, which the first time I played that game, I beat it in maybe an hour and a half. So, you know, it's not a long game, but it's a game that required you to go back and replay it.
Sure.
But he then goes and says, couldn't the game have 4-player online co-op?
Mm-hmm.
And if that is in this game...
If it's on 360?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, well...
I mean, it'd be nice. I mean, co-op's not... I mean, they did... I didn't play... what was it? Rogue Squadron 3 Rebel Strike. But that had the entire first Rogue Squadron 2 as a co-op game, didn't it?
Right.
Yeah, and it's pretty badass. Like, if you play that... Was it... Razor Rendezvous level where you have to kill like 3 Super Star Destroyers. It's much easier. Well, actually, they cranked up the difficulty to compensate for the fact that you have 2 people. But it chugs a little bit. The frame rate, understandably, has a little hard time keeping up. But the technology going on there is astounding, and that level still looks amazing, even in the original.
Everything in that franchise looks amazing.
Yeah.
So you didn't know that the GameCube launch window was going to be pretty much as good as it was going to get from
unfortunately.
The Nintendo platform graphics.
Yeah, really.
The graphics actually went down as the GameCube got older. Mm-hmm. But
I think at this point we've talked about a hypothetical Star Fox game more than we talked about everything else combined in new business.
But there's one thing I want to point out. We do have an article on the site from right after Command came out by the designer. Who worked on what? The original Star Fox game?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, Dylan Cuthbert, he worked on the original, and his company, and he worked on the Star Fox Command.
And does he not intimate that he's working on something at the end of that article?
Yes.
Yeah, there is a reference.
He hints.
There is
he
a
hints,
reference.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. He hints strongly, and I think he probably is.
So if he I honestly think that we might get this hypothetical game we're talking about.
Maybe I'll email him and make sure he listens to this and gets all of our ideas.
Because Command was a good try at sort of bringing the thing back to form.
Yeah, and I don't think he got all the way there, it's a hell of an improvement.
It was quite influenced by the unreleased Star Fox 2, wasn't it? Because that was all range as well, which was quite a shocking... Because people say, certain things got incorporated in Star Fox 64. Well, not that much if it was all range. It was a very different game.
All I can say is, if you're interested in Star Fox, if you're interested in these ideas and these discussions, definitely go find that article on the website, the interview with Dylan Cuthbert about Star Fox Command. Because we talk about Star Fox 2 and Star Fox 64 and why the game is all range, all this kind of stuff. It's really interesting. And there are a lot of clues still left open and standing about what's going to happen with the series and what they might be working on.
But,
That's a cool article.
If they're not working on it, there is another team that could be. Because remember, Factor 5 is now announced to be working on a Nintendo project.
Yeah, and Retro's working on something.
Well, Julian Egbrecht has kind of intimated that they might be developing a casual-oriented game.
Oh, brother.
Oh, God.
That only utilizes the Wii Remote on itself with heavily leveraged on the pointer function. So if that is what he's doing, obviously they haven't made anything explicit at this point, I rather doubt it's the kind of Star Fox game that we've been talking about at the very least.
Boogie 2. I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
Boogie 2. I think Julian actually implied that they had the Lair engine running on Wii.
Yes, he did. Yeah, he did. Yeah.
That's kind of crazy.
But you know.
Anyway.
You know,
I'm excited to see what they're doing.
Oh, absolutely.
Making a casual
always.
Game, it'll have the best graphics of any casual game ever.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah,
it will.
Exactly.
There's no doubt about that. He basically said as much in those interviews. He's like, "We are going to kill everything graphically on the Wii." And I have no doubt that they
And
will.
Even when he was bashing the Wii, he was also bashing developers by saying, "What the hell's wrong with you people? We were doing this in the GameCube launch window in a game we developed in 6 months."
But wasn't he also
I would say, other than probably Galaxy, there's still nothing that looks as good as Factor 5's
Yeah, but,
GameCube
I mean,
games.
Didn't they actually bash the Wii out of the gate, though?
Yeah,
I remember
did.
Something.
Yeah, but they were being paid by Sony.
Exactly.
I mean, Dennis Dyack, I can give you interviews we did with Dennis Dyack back in, like, 2002, where he was, like, laughing at the Xbox and how terrible it was going to do and how awful the hardware was.
It's amazing.
And,
amazing.
You know, now he's getting paid by Microsoft,
it's,
so...
It's amazing how partisan they can become with a little money changing hands.
Allegiances are swift to alter.
And people say the console wars are all the domain of form goers.
Yeah. No, the developers definitely get into it. But they become very intimate with the hardware and they feel certain allegiances to it. And then things happen and they, you know, they start to look
into
it.
Well, it's just like
things.
Any kind of dev. Like, you know, like you have some guys that like to program in C++, and some guys like, you know, like to program in Java or whatever. And they'll trash the other programming language. It's the same kind of stuff. It's like whatever you happen to use or happen to like or whatever you learned on or grew up on, that's what you're going to like, and you're probably going to trash something else. So.
Yeah, even though it's not logical to do so.
Just try. Both.
Okay, let's move on to reader mail. We have three quick ones here. First, Saturn asks, have you guys heard much more about Mazes of Fate for the DS since 2 years ago? I guess that's when it was originally announced. Anybody know anything about Mazes of Fate for the DS?
That's a no.
You know...
I think it came out on Game Boy Advance, and I think David Trammell reviewed it on the site. So this must be some kind of like DS upgrade, kind of like Scourge got, maybe. That's all I can figure.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not being very helpful on this one.
Well, actually,
I just thought I would throw it out there.
When I saw the email, going to the email, I don't know, a couple days ago, I looked into it, and I didn't see much written recently. So it might have been a quietly shelved game.
Yeah, I think, in fact, I'm almost positive Mazes of Fate did come out on the GBA at least. And from what I remember from David's review, it's kind of a very hardcore, old school, sort of Western style RPG. That's where all the dungeons are in first person, so they're like mazes, and you're wandering around. So, if you like that stuff, like Eye of the Beholder or Dungeon Explorer or Phantasy Star 1, you might get into it. It's not the kind of thing I'm interested in. I mean, you know, you pretty much have to draw a map as you play through the game or else you're not going to know what's going on. But, yeah. Okay, next question. Lindemann, will you ask this one?
Let's pull this one
please.
Up. Okay, Shy Guy writes, last week on a different podcast, your buddy, Dennis Dyack, interestingly enough, brought up his one-console future idea again. What is the RFN crew's opinion of a one-console future? I would like to say that one-console future may very well be Electronic Arts. Anybody? Discuss.
Nah, I mean, did you see the sales of Madden last year? They're not invincible at all.
Are you for sale, Johnny? Is EA going to buy you next? Come on.
EA is Unicron.
They really are.
Just
they're actually,
devours everything.
They are actually voiced by Orson Welles. I think so.
Exactly. Last film he ever made. Oh, yeah. Class.
I would sell my family for even a quarter of that Take-Two bid offer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Curious timing, isn't it? What could possibly have precipitated them trying to acquire
I wonder.
Take-Two?
Yeah,
why would they want Take-Two now?
Sports.
Yeah, unfathomable.
Actually, no. There is a large sort of floating idea that they acquired Take-Two because Take-Two is the only other company that makes sports games right now.
I mean, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's part of it, but they haven't, we should say, they have not acquired Take-Two. They put out a $2 billion bid for Take-Two, and Take-Two said, nuh-uh, we're not that cheap.
Apparently, they viewed, you know, the big Take-Two title coming up as just sort of icing on the cake of creating a sports game monopoly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in terms of how this relates to what Dennis has been talking about, you know, I heard it recently in terms of him, what underpins his belief that there is going to be a one-console future is...
we should say, this was on 1UP Yours last week,
during
GDC.
Yeah.
I've downloaded that, but I haven't listened to it
yet. Yeah, I actually listened to it today, so I suppose that anoints me as the authority on this.
Speak, brother.
So his underpinning belief on why the one console future is going to happen. He basically says it's going to happen. It's not. It might happen, or it'd be nice if it happens. He thinks it's going to happen because of the economic realities that there are for developers, and that ultimately, you know, that's what's going to drive a sort of in the future an open source kind of one console future rather than a monopoly situation.
I'm rolling my eyes right now.
Yeah.
Completely rolling.
Yeah, and I don't know. I didn't find the argument that persuasive, to be honest, because I think if you look at what Nintendo's doing and things like that, and to a lesser extent what the other consoles do, there's a sufficient amount of product differentiation that you can achieve that you're always going to be able to fragment the market. You know, it's never going to be as homogenous as DVD or Blu-ray.
I think this was a much more compelling argument last generation when you had PS2, Xbox, and GameCube that were basically all the same technology.
Mm.
And this generation, it's much harder to make this argument, I think, because we've seen that 360 and PS3 are quite similar, although I think that the differences between them will become more pronounced as the years go on. But Wii is obviously a totally different beast. And it's neither better nor worse than those technologies. It's just different.
Mm.
And I guess the idea is that with a one console type of scenario, something like the Wii would still be possible, but it would be basically serve as some kind of accessory that you could add
well,
on.
Well, I think that's
to the
where
core
the sort
hardware.
Of this open source part of it came. That, you know, that his thought was that there'd be some sort of underpinning format, but that was universal. But at the same time, within that, people could innovate and they could do different things. So it wasn't a case of, you know, one. It's not a one console future in the sense that Nintendo has one machine that is video game player for everyone everywhere in the world, or Microsoft or Sony for that matter. It is a sort of an open source standard that then I guess people can like bolt onto, but it's some sort of foundation. A lot of the argument to me went a bit over my head, frankly. It was a bit inside baseball in terms of the economics of developers and what is, you know, that somehow he seems to think there's essentially a crisis within the economics of development that is eventually going to lead to this being somehow necessary.
I don't think
and,
so.
I think that one reason this is not going to happen soon, if ever, is that the major hardware manufacturers don't want it to happen. I mean, it's in their best interest economically to retain some kind of exclusivity, you know, exclusive platform format, because they make royalties on it.
Yes.
And in Nintendo's case, they can sell that hardware for a profit.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing technically competing with Wii. There's no Matsushita Wii. There's no Toshiba Wii to compete with the Nintendo Wii.
Yeah.
And therefore Nintendo can set whatever price they want to for the hardware. And so companies like Nintendo and Sony and Microsoft have no interest in perpetuating this sort of open source format, and because of that, I don't think it's going to happen.
No, I mean, I agree. I mean, on the surface of it, it does seem to me that, let's say, how do you know, the video game market is intensely competitive in many ways at the minute, but how does one create market power in that situation? By differentiation. And that's exactly what Nintendo have done with the Blue Ocean strategy, is to completely separate themselves from the others, and therefore they are free to price their hardware where they're not making a loss. That's the magic. I mean, obviously Nintendo never liked to do that under any circumstances, but now they've, by differentiating themselves so thoroughly from the other two that have sold it at a significant loss competing against each other, they're not going to be talking about a Wii price cut for probably years hence from now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I mean, there's one thing that we need to look at in the future, and I honestly think that this generation, the massive differentiation that took place, is an anomaly. I honestly believe that the next generation, all the consoles will have a control scheme, or at least an optional control scheme, not dissimilar from what the Wii has. I honestly believe that they're all going to be graphically relatively close to each other, because there's not a whole lot more that you can push with the PS3 and the 360. The games are...
Yeah, but if you look at it from Nintendo's perspective, they're going to find some other way that we probably haven't even considered to differentiate yet again.
No.
I don't...
And so this time they'll say, well, motion control's been done, but this time we're doing holograms.
I don't think they'll get away with it.
It doesn't have to be something so tangibly technical or tactile as a difference in the control.
It could just be marketing.
What developers you recruit, how you influence what kinds of games they develop, you know, those partnerships and things like that, and obviously branding that already exists, which Nintendo is establishing as we speak, is going to carry forward into that as we go on. And yeah, there are, and the video game industry is still young, and as it expands and expands and expands, it can go into more directions. And you may have game consoles that get renowned as being, you know, the sort of narrative home of video games that are heavy on, you know, the realism in the graphics, or at least, you know, spectacular sort of elements in the graphics, but also, you know, a heavy emphasis on character, story development, storytelling. Whereas, you know, Nintendo could continue to go on and say, well, this is simple, easy, accessible, playable for everyone in the family and so forth. That can continue on in many different ways with the development of technology and the game industry as a whole.
I mean, I agree. You could.
All right, Lindemann, why don't you take the last word on this?
I mean, I agree with what Greg is saying in the sense that I think, you know, going forward, I think the industry is kind of going to almost split out sort of into content streams. I mean, if you look at the film industry, you have, you know, studios like Pixar. You know what you're going to get out of Pixar. You're going to get kind of, you know, you're going to get these fun animated films that appeal to both, you know, kids and everybody else, you know, everybody from 8 to 80. But then you also have, you know, a studio like Miramax, who makes these kind of cutting-edge little, you know, these cutting-edge films that are maybe, you know, like the Quentin Tarantino kind of stuff. And you could have...
Or Troma.
Exactly. But that's the thing. I mean, maybe Sony will, you know, kind of move towards that Miramax sort of end of the spectrum, and then you'll have Nintendo, which will move towards that Pixar end of the spectrum. So, I mean, I think going forward,
they're already there.
I don't think you can really say that it's going to be. I just think the whole, you know, one platform thing, I just don't think it's going to work, because I think it requires cooperation from an industry that will never want to cooperate with each other.
Well, you know.
Yeah, this is almost like all the five families sitting at a table, and they pretend that they're cooperating, and they make rules like, we're not going to allow narcotics into the city, and because, you know, that's whatever. And of course, what ends up happening is that Michael kills all the other families.
I mean, I just don't think it makes good business.
He pretends to cooperate, but then he kills off the competition.
Yeah, I mean, I think above all, I don't think it makes business sense for any of these companies to cooperate with each other.
All right, let's cut it off there. We could probably talk about this more. It's a fascinating discussion, but we do need to move on because we have a new segment today.
Oh!
And so the last question that we have is from Adolf Vega, and he asks, have you seen any Meteos-related items or assist trophies in Super Smash Bros. Brawl? Sakurai helped in making that game as well, so it would be a shock if he didn't include anything Meteos-related while including so much Kirby-related stuff in Brawl. And actually, I was wondering about this because I know Nintendo published Meteos in certain territories, but I did a little research, and it looks like Bandai published it in Japan, and of course it was developed by Q Games, the creators of Rez and Lumines and other music type games, and so I think that it's not included because it is essentially a third party game, and there might have been some sort of legal conflicts there.
Yeah, sure.
But, yeah, I'm pretty sure that there's nothing Meteos-related, unfortunately, in Brawl. And I love Meteos, at least the first one. The Disney one?
Wasn't that just, like, a reskinning? I mean, did it have any... It had, like, a horizontal mode or something, but...
It's not a mode. That's
Well, it's the whole game, mandatory. Isn't it? Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, the problem with that is that you can't have as many columns, and so it actually makes the game far easier.
Well, I suppose...
It's not... Actually, not only is the screen more narrow when you hold it that way... But the pieces are also bigger, so they're easier to see, and that was probably one of the complaints. Because if you go back and play Meteos, the pieces are really small, and it can be difficult because of that. But Disney Meteos is okay. I mean, it's still fun, it's still good, but I don't think it's nearly as good as the original. Because for one thing, I don't think Sakurai was involved in it, so.
Sakura!
Okay. Sakurai! Okay, so we're going to take another short break. We'll be back with segment 3, because for once we have some Nintendo news worth talking about. Back for a Rare news segment. Not about Rare, but it just doesn't happen that often because, you know, Nintendo is not the most forthcoming company, and, yeah. But GDC happened last week. They had some sessions. Some news came out. There were a few interviews with people, and we have an interesting set of news stories to talk about. But first, VC Mondays for this week. Kirby 64, The Crystal Shards. How exciting.
I like this game. I don't know what you're talking about.
I do too.
Sarcastic.
No, I wasn't being sarcastic. I was being faux sarcastic.
Oh, okay. Sarcastic about being sarcastic.
I've kind of heard conflicted things on this. I've never really, you know, some people seem to be quite fond of it, and then others seem to be relatively disparaging in terms of its place in the Kirby series.
So is it actually a real Kirby game, or what's it like?
Yeah, it's a real Kirby game.
Real Kirby game.
I think people's position will soften now that the last real Kirby game we got was Kirby Squeak Squad.
Yeah, which is,
you know, that sold nearly a million copies in Japan.
Oh,
and like I think the most depressing thing is that Kirby Canvas Curse, the touch one, that didn't sell,
which is good,
which is really good.
Really good.
Did not sell anywhere near that well.
I think it just
but it
point,
may
though.
It may have motivated them to bring out the remake of Kirby Superstar, which they're doing, which is nice actually. So maybe
which they're doing. Wait, tell us more.
You didn't know that?
You haven't heard about Kirby? What? They're calling it in Japan Kirby Ultra Deluxe as opposed to Super Deluxe.
Really?
It's going to be a remake of Kirby Superstar for the DS.
Whoa, no, I haven't heard anything about it.
It was
end
of last year.
Cool.
It was very sort of stealthy. I think it came out of that Japanese press event where they showed the first things of WiiWare and whatnot. And the Fire Emblem remake as well was mentioned for DS.
I don't care as much about that.
But they kind of stealthily unveil a couple. But they'll just say Squeak Squad being traditional but selling that well might have expedited that. So there's some good come of it, possibly.
Well, hopefully it'll expedite a good new Kirby game in the Kirby franchise.
Well, I think the Japanese release list still has the new Kirby for Wii, started on GameCube like 8 years ago.
It does, yes.
Kirby, you know, like Mina no Kirby or whatever it's called. Yeah, it's not Mina.
Hoshi
but
no Kirby,
else.
I think. Is,
yeah, it's
Kirby. Hoshi, yeah. Kirby's Adventure. And that is supposedly coming out this year in Japan for Wii.
Yeah.
We still don't know
and
anything
next year,
about it.
There
was
year
like
after that.
One screenshot of it for GameCube released a long time ago.
Yeah, it's on the
ago.
Back of my launch GameCube box.
Is it really?
That's nice. Great. That's really good.
All right. So anyway, Kirby 64, the shining feature, the thing that differentiates it from the other Kirby games is that you can swallow two different enemies and get two powers at the same time, which will cause them to mix together and create a new power that you can only get from mixing two of the basic powers. So the basic ones are all the standard, like fire and lightning and shock and things like that.
And what? Wheel,
yeah. And the cool thing is you can take, say, shock and freeze and mix them together in your belly and you create a new power that turns Kirby into a refrigerator that spits out food that kills enemies and then you can run over and eat the food to regain health.
That's
awesome. Sweet.
Yeah. And some of the combined powers are really cool and they're not found in any other Kirby game. And unfortunately, even though this game came out several years ago, this feature of combining powers has never been redone. But it makes it one of my favorite Kirby games, actually. So I've already downloaded it. I'm waiting to play it as soon as we finish recording.
Nice.
So the other game this week is Psychosis. And by the way, this breaks my theory that Nintendo will release first-party games by themselves so as not to cannibalize the sales of whatever else
comes
out.
Well, Kirby 64 didn't do that well in its initial release, so maybe they don't view it as much of a threat.
Yeah, it's not a huge game, but... Yeah, that could be. I don't know. It's obviously not like a big marquee game, but I still think it's fun. I think it's worth $10. I've already spent my $10 on it. But yeah, the other game this week is Psychosis for TurboGrafx-16. And anybody want to guess what kind of game it is?
Let me see. Percentage wise, could it be horizontally scrolling shooter?
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah,
a shooter.
It's a horizontal shoot 'em up.
Yay! And, everybody celebrate.
Yeah, Greg.
TG16.
Greg, were you saying it's that the premise of this game was kind of unusual?
Well, yes. As I said earlier, basically what's interesting about this game is, to me, it represents just how many shooters, if you hadn't already got the idea from the Virtual Console's lineup, were on the TG16, because the premise is so bizarre, it shows to the lengths to which developers would go to actually differentiate their shooters from every other one on the system. So what it is that in this case, you are a person that is dying. But your subconscious, being the trooper that it is sort of somehow managed to form a spaceship-type thing in your body, which will then attack the cause of the malaise, which rather is like waves of enemies in a horizontally scrolling shooter.
Oh. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the story was probably written after the game was finished.
Yes, like, what the hell can we attach to this? I don't know, but maybe like subconscious stuff, like dreams maybe? Yeah, all right, then we'll go with that.
Oh dear. Okay, so there's your alternative to Kirby 64. This week it's called Psychosis. All right, enough with Virtual Console. Let's move on to the GDC Newsapalooza. And we'll start off with probably the biggest announcements from the show. WiiWare is launching in North America on May 12th. That's roughly 2 months after the Japanese launch. Mm-hmm. Still don't know about Europe on WiiWare.
Surprise, surprise.
The first games for WiiWare will include, not necessarily limited to this, but will include Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles, My Life as a King, which has already been shown. It's sort of a simulation game in which you play this little child king who has to build up a city, and you never even leave this town. So it's sort of limited in scope, and it's not a traditional Final Fantasy game, but it uses that kind of style, and it has beautiful
graphics.
And
this is the same game that they were talking about earlier. It just got a new title.
Right. Yeah. It used to be called like the Little King or the Tale of the Little
and
King.
The Promised
title's
Land,
longer.
I think it had in before.
Yeah, the Little King Land. And the Promised Land. There it is.
See,
yeah, this is still not the same as Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles, the Crystal Bearers, okay, which is the realistic looking Crystal Chronicles for Wii. That's like not a WiiWare game, but like a real Wii game, and they haven't shown that in a long time. Yes. And there's a lot of rumors that the development is sort of in trouble.
I hope not, because
but hopefully that'll still come out. Yeah,
that
I was
video
excited
made
for that
me
one.
Think of my favorite game on the GameCube.
What?
That would be. Oh god, I can't remember the name of it now.
You forgot? Yeah,
favorite. Okay, Dreamcast RPG.
That's Skies of Arcadia Legends.
There we go.
Yeah. Okay. So, another WiiWare game that was announced is called Lost Winds. This has never been shown before GDC, and it's basically a 3D platformer with you control this character with the nunchuck, and you use the Wii pointer to draw trails of wind on the screen, and the wind manipulates different things, though. It sounds like the kind of thing that's very well suited for Wii. It's been created exclusively for Wii. And it's an original title for WiiWare. And they also very briefly and ambiguously announced a new episodic game series from Telltale. This is the company that makes Sam & Max for the PC. So that's kind of exciting, actually. If you're into the story, point-and-click adventure type stuff, this could be very cool. And it's apparently not Sam & Max as originally reported. If you remember, several weeks ago, there was a report that Telltale would be porting Sam & Max, the episodic series, to Wii, either as a disc or as a downloadable series, but it looks like it's actually going to be something new from them, so there's something to be excited about, too. Mm-hmm. The other announcement that was made at the same time is that Wii Fit is finally launching in North America on May 19th, which is a week after WiiWare, and they did not announce a price yet.
Yeah, I think they did say that they would get under $100, which may well mean $99.99.
You know, the price in Japan is roughly about $70.
Oh yeah, sure, but I mean,
so I was expecting considerably less than 100.
Yeah, I
wouldn't pay 100
whenever there's an opportunity to gouge. Why not?
Yeah,
maybe this is just my European cynicism talking here. I come from a continent where Lynx crossbow training with Zappa is more expensive than Geometry Wars. So,
no, around here, the Wii is actually known as sort of a budget price system.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty friendly to the wallet. So I'm expecting Wii Fit to hit about $75 or $75. And that's, of course, that's with the balance board. The other big game that we were sort of expecting to hear about at GDC, we didn't. That would be Mario Kart Wii. Nintendo said essentially nothing about it. IGN got to play it, and they put out some very detailed, very interesting impressions that you should check out if you haven't already. They got to play it before GDC at Nintendo's offices, and I assumed that would precipitate an actual GDC demo later in the week that the rest of the media would get to play, but no. So we still don't have a release date for that, but there are a lot more details about all the online modes and things like that, so go check out IGN's impressions. And, wait for more. Now, Greg,
yes.
I believe you have some interesting European news regarding some of the things we just mentioned.
A couple of not really seeing how it's directly linked to GDC, but it happened at the same time, is that they dropped a bit of an April bombshell that actually two of the biggest titles of the year that we're aware of today on Wii are going to come out within 2 weeks of each other in Europe before
And none of
America.
Them are Brawl.
Yeah, and neither of them are Brawl. Mario Kart will be coming on April 11th, which is one day, I believe, after the Japanese launch. And then 2 weeks later, on the 25th, we'll have Wii Fit, which obviously a few weeks before the American launch. So that's pretty big news. And obviously, it leaves us all wondering, with Brawl not announced for a date in Europe, where does this leave it in terms of how far into the future is it going to be at this point before Europe gets its hands on it?
It seems likely for some kind of summer release.
Well, I mean, the rumors have pointed towards June, but on the most recent one of yours podcast, there was a reference to the American journalist, all the American journalists spoke with Reggie at a luncheon, were asking why Europe was getting Mario Kart first as opposed to America. And the explanation was, well, because they're not getting Smash Brothers till later. And the quote was, in the fall.
Oh.
Which would be, you know, that says to me September. That says to me Super Paper Fucking Mario release. Would actually constitute a longer delay than the almost mythic Super Paper Mario delay April to September.
Or Animal Crossing in Australia, I think, is the most.
Oh yeah, Animal Crossing has got everything beat. To be fair,
as far as games that actually eventually came out, I think Animal Crossing has to be one of the most delayed Nintendo games. Region to region.
Yeah.
It took like 3 years for them to release the Australian version.
It was years, absolutely. I think it was 2 years in Europe then an extra year in Australia or something retarded like that. I mean, the delays between Europe and Australia are a disgrace because there's already a PAL version, there's already English language.
Hey, that's a big ocean, man.
What is there to do there?
They're
what was interesting in terms of it was referenced that, you know, they didn't explicitly say this, but putting it together a bit, that some of what's driving some of these decisions is the scarcity of Wii hardware and sort of shifting the allocations by territory to go along with software releases. So obviously we've had Wii Fit at the end of last year and then Smash Brothers at the beginning of the year in Japan, and that's been getting all the units, and that's some of why the Wii fell down on the NPDs a bit, even though it was still number one in January in the US. Yeah. Now, with Smash Brothers coming to the US, that's going to get an influx of units. And then I assume that's some of why we're getting Wii Fit and Mario Kart at the same time in Europe, essentially. So they can just sort of do their hardware shift to Europe all in one go in the middle of April, essentially. And then they'll probably be shifting back to the US in May when you've got Wii Fit coming out. But
it still doesn't explain when Mario Kart's coming to America. And one thing I want to note is that despite the implication from Reggie that Europe is getting Mario Kart first, I'm not convinced yet, because it seems to me unlikely that Nintendo would go through April. Right now, I don't think Nintendo has a game planned for April for Wii.
Hmm.
And it seems to me like if they're still saying spring for Mario Kart, April is the obvious time.
Well,
for,
I personally think it'd be in April. It just won't be a day after the Japanese. It'll be like a fortnight after or something.
Sure, yeah, it could be.
I think it's going to be a pretty perfunctory lead-in for the European audience just to say they got Mario Kart first when you're talking about 14 to 21 days versus several months.
And that's fine. They've done that a couple of times with various titles. Occasionally Europe will get something a couple of weeks before. I don't see this as like, well, America's not getting Mario Kart until June or July.
I doubt that. Yeah.
That makes no sense whatsoever, especially considering, obviously, there aren't any major translation issues if Europe can get it a day after Japan.
Precisely.
And the other thing is, obviously the big game that no one wants to compete with in April is Grand Theft Auto 4.
Yeah.
But I don't think Mario Kart really has to worry about that. It's such a totally different demographic.
I just agree,
yeah.
Actually.
Cater to an entirely different audience. I just can't see. I mean, you're also going to have people, don't forget, people are going to buy both of those games. Because people that have a 360 or a PS3, they're going to buy them both. They're two entirely different games, so they can both sit on your shelf.
But, they're not competing in terms of sales, but they could be competing in terms of consciousness about the game existing.
Press, I suppose. But to some extent, they're probably try and tap a sort of different press sort of stream with Mario Kart, because they're putting it in the white box and with the wheel and everything, so they're kind of moving it away from every other Mario branded game you've ever seen.
That wheel is so stupid.
This. Regardless of its functional abilities,
it's made of foam.
It is an attempt to sort of position.
Wait, I thought it was kind of hard plastic.
I thought it was foam.
It's foam? Are you?
I have no idea what its construction is, but I mean, the point is that I think they're trying to position Mario Kart as more akin to sort of Wii Sports than Strikers Charged or whatever else.
I mean, even if Mario Kart does come out around the time of Grand Theft Auto, I think you'll have, in terms of the press, I think you'll have, Mario Kart put out there as, this is the family game to own this month.
Mm.
And, Grand Theft Auto being, this is the adult game to own this month.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a narrative there.
That's extremely common, say, in the movie industry, where you see this big rated R slasher film come out the same week as a children's movie. They sort of, it's not that they coordinate in terms of, like, the studios call each other and say, well, what are you doing
this
weekend?
Because that would be illegal.
But they look at each other's release schedules, and they try to plan around the competition. Mm-hmm. And they're not afraid to release those movies on the same weekend because they're so totally different.
Yeah, I mean, a high-five movie, you're not going to release it on the same weekend as a Star Wars movie. But if you have some romantic comedy, why not?
Exactly, yeah. All right, so moving on to the next story. One thing that was mentioned extremely briefly during GDC, and I don't know exactly where this happened, but I did read it reported in multiple sources, is that everybody's Nintendo channel, which is this thing in Japan for Wii where you can like watch videos of upcoming games and leave comments about how excited you are for different things, or you can kind of vote on which game you're most excited for, I think, and then also broadcast DS game demos to your DS from the Wii, which is a really cool feature. Anyway, that's been out for a couple of months in Japan, and it is coming to other regions soon. So that's kind of the first official confirmation that, yes, that is coming.
And we have site impressions, don't we?
We do have a fair bit of coverage on that from the site. Wendy, on his Japanese Wii, has been using it quite a bit. So that's cool. This is like the first, it's a much easier way to get DS demos than going to your infernal local GameStop. Which I actually like. I go to GameStop rarely, but I would take my DS to download demos if I could just remember to do it. But I never remember to take it because I'm just, I'm not the kind of guy who shoves his DS in his pocket.
Well, it's interesting. I see those kiosks at the airport, but every time I'm at the airport, I'm always in a hurry and I never have time to download. It's so ironic.
I've never seen one at the airport.
I've seen them at non-game related stores recently too. Actually, I think I saw one at Target the other day. DS download station. Although it didn't have the stupid rubber mat or anything, it was just emblazoned on the side of the DS bolt thing it was bolted to.
Now, if they get them in convenience stores, then, like in Japan, then we'll be rolling.
Well, they'll be in your house. You don't have to worry about it.
All right, now here's a really interesting story One of the things announced during Nintendo's GDC session that was talking about the development of the Wii hardware and the online features and WiiWare.
Online features.
Sort of a catch-all session. One of the things they announced, or they didn't make it like a really formal announcement, like there was no press release, but they confirmed it during the session, is that something called Nintendo Wi-Fi Connection Pay and Play is going to be coming soon to a Wii near you. And this is a service that will charge you for certain online features in certain games, and it's charged on a game-by-game basis. This would be something that you would pay for with Wii points from within that game. And that's about all they said for it. They haven't announced any specific games or prices yet, but all I can say is WTF, man.
Yes.
I mean, this. Not only are we paying for online now, but like, what the hell are we paying for? Like,
well,
you know, like Nintendo's online features are ass.
No, well, immediately the speculation is that this is in preparation for Animal Crossing. That you know, there's going to be things you can pay for in that game should you wish, or maybe it is going to be more like an MMO and it is going to be subscription based.
Well, you know. That kind of makes me think.
That's the first speculation that's occurred, but I'm not sure they handled this in the most careful way. You know, because it's not immediately obvious that this isn't just gonna like you know that people are not gonna sort of worry about having to pay for the kind of online features that they've already been in quote unquote enjoying, such as one can for free. to date, so that may well not be the case. I assume, in my eternal optimism, that it is not. However, just that suggestion that that could be the case out there is not a good thing. So this wasn't exactly the slick PR work by Nintendo for the first.
Well, no, not
but
at all.
Just going back to WiiWare as well. You put these two together in downloading because I always thought they're never going to have downloadable content with their attitude towards storage. That attitude pretty much indicated that they had no interest in downloadable content, which is what we're talking about. It's not just a subscription charge for online. There will be pay to download content as well. And
right.
It
brings it up to parity with the other platforms in terms of being able to pay for new levels, new songs.
Well,
and
yeah, exactly. That really depends on.
This is something that we have actually been hoping for, but it's not. I mean, and that was sort of announced at the same time that downloadable content is coming to Wii, and that's great. But it wasn't very clear from the way it was announced whether this pay and play service only referred to that, or whether it meant that certain games are coming out that you can't play online without paying some kind of $5 a month.
Precisely,
service.
That's
what the hell is this? Is this Phantasy Star Online?
This kind of ambiguity is not helpful. But I mean, the real thing for me is that when you look back at with WiiWare now, you're going to be wanting to download. Yeah, there's going to be a whole other stream, separate from the Virtual Console, of games that you want to download. There is a file size limit, but obviously there will be pretty big in some cases. We've seen that there is ambition there. It's not all going to be just online Dr. Mario or whatever. and you put that or that god awful N64 graphics Pokemon Farm channel. What is up with that? I mean, when you see Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles and you see Lost Winds, why, if the whole point of the game is to interact with a 3D representation of your Pokemon, why do they look like shit? I don't get that at all. That's beside the point. The point is, you've got WiiWare games, you've got downloadable content, all this stuff, in addition to the, you know, people like us are already completely up against the wall on the storage, and yet there's nothing on a hard drive. There's nothing on expanding the use of the SD card slot so you can actually play stuff straight off it. And it just seems to me that they're cutting their nose off despite their face here. I mean, WiiWare and Virtual Console games, they can be impulse purchases. Mm-hmm. You know, it's this game comes out this week, I feel like downloading a Virtual Console game, I might get it. Even though, you know, if they'd all been dumped at once, you wouldn't have looked through the library to find it. It's just, it's there, it's out now, you want to play, you download it. But if you've got to swap a million things over to your SD card and back again and whatever, you're not going to do that.
Yep.
And here we are now, you're expanding that problem with downloadable content and WiiWare, and it's just completely unmanageable, and they haven't said a thing about what they're going to do about it. It's just remarkable to me.
I mean, if I'm going to pay for anything, I mean, a couple of weeks ago I was here ranting about how long it takes to copy an N64 game to your SD card. And here they are. I mean, assuming DLC, I want to know really what DLC means. I mean, does it mean that they're actually going to have songs for Guitar Hero 3? Frankly, I doubt it.
And Rock Band, which was recently announced for Wii.
Guitar Hero has already proven we're not going to get downloadable content. The fact that game exists disproves downloadable content for Rock.
Well,
for
not necessarily. But the thing is, that even makes it look worse, though.
You know, I mean, if you're going to do DLC, I mean, it was okay for them saying, okay, well, you're not getting this DLC or that DLC, because their whole, you know, their whole online thing was kind of Mickey Mouse to begin with, so I could kind of excuse it. But now, if they're going to DLC, what, are you going to have this crippled DLC that's just going to suck? I mean, you're going to only be able to buy, like, t-shirts for your character from Animal Crossing? Like, that's just stupid.
Well, you imagine, you know what I mean? Imagine the situation where you had a future Guitar Hero or Rock Band, and you had downloadable content with songs, but it's like, oh, if I want to play this song, I've got to take this song off and put it onto my SD card, and that's then take this that from my SD card. It is absolutely absurd. And
To be fair, go ahead, James.
Say right out, going back to the whole idea that this was the most bungled PR move Nintendo's made in a long series of bungled PR moves over the last entirety of their existence, this came out originally because the first indication we got of this was they put up a logo. It was a red logo that said pay to play online or something like that.
Stop, do not buy this game. What?
they really thought that would get the fan base excited for what's
coming
up next.
But my initial thought was, oh, there are third parties who want money for their online games. And that was how I was framing it in any discussion I had about it. Because I was holding to this optimistic mentality that Nintendo said, we're not going to charge for online. And we're not going to do online till we can do it without charging and nerfing it.
Yes. I think they made that pretty explicit that was their
They said that through the GameCube as to why there weren't online games, and then they said it in the Wii as they hyped up the online service as much of a service as it is. And
services. Yes. A funny word
and,
there,
Well, that was my initial thought. This must be for third-party stuff, but just hearing Greg talk about it now, like downloadable stuff that you can buy for Animal Crossing,
That's the speculation. I mean, that is the first thing that people have heard this in the industry have gone to, and I can see why. But there's nothing. This is the point. They didn't give us any kind of specifics whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's just
there's no context for this.
It's just Wii points will exchange hands for something to do with the internet. That's about it.
but remember, what was the name of as we referred to it lovingly on the site, Lollygolf? What was its actual name?
Swing Golf.
Penga exists on the PC, and a lot of Korean games like this exist on the PC, as their money stream through buying crap for your characters with real money. And I'm wondering if maybe this is like a sort of a gimme to these third parties who create these relatively casual games. I mean, Pyonga's a pretty casual game on the computer, and they make their money by selling bear ear hats that give you +3 swing strength. And I'm wondering if that could be both the downloadable content asset that wouldn't and could avoid Nintendo's whole sort of, oh, don't worry about storage, it's okay, and still classify as downloadable content and pay-to-play stuff, although I'm not sure you'd want to classify those as pay-to-play precisely, but the same mentality of third parties are looking for a revenue stream for their games they, in theory, won't charge a lot for.
Yeah, I think the name of this service, Pay and Play, leads me to believe that it's not just paying for extra downloadable content.
Yeah.
It sounds like you actually have to pay to play the game,
subscription,
like online.
Yeah,
like it's some kind of subscription thing.
Yeah.
And that I find a little troublesome.
That's a real stupid name.
Yeah,
because that's exactly where it's going.
Yeah, I think it's a stupid name anyway.
It's not great.
Pay and Play.
It's kind of isn't that something that you use in a pejorative sense? That expression.
Exactly.
I mean, it's absurd to use. I mean, it really, it is. As John said, it's like, stop, don't buy this. It really is.
I can't think of
a better way to sum it up.
And they made the logo red.
Exactly. Yeah. Without a negative connotation.
Red, as in you're getting bled by this game.
It's a warning.
You're getting bled dry.
Maybe that's our biggest
indicator. There is one possibility.
Go ahead.
There is one possibility here, is that it could be what I call the Saw 2 model. In that this exists purely to make its predecessor look better than it is. so that this will be such
then a, them will appreciate
this,
it more,
this will
right?
be such a steaming atrocity that it will actually make the good old days of the blue logo seem absolutely brilliant. And
that sounds like the plot of a supervillain. Sounds... I'm going to kill lots of people so that everyone else will appreciate their
that
life.
That sounds like the plot of something Yamauchi would do.
Yeah. Well, all right. We touched upon it earlier, but the issue of storage on the Wii obviously keeps coming up, and it's going to come up even more with these new services and downloadable content WiiWare. All of a sudden, everybody's wondering, where am I going to put this stuff on my half a gig of flash memory?
Right now.
Or do I just keep having to move junk over to the SD card, which takes forever and is really cumbersome? And the only thing Nintendo mentioned at GDC related to this, other than reiterating that, yes, you can move things over to the SD card, doesn't that solve all of your problems?
No.
They did mention that they're going to add a feature, and I have to imagine this will probably be included in some kind of firmware update closer to May, but they say that they're enabling WiiWare titles to be downloaded as compressed packages and then decompressed every time you open them up from the Wii menu. So that means that they'll probably take a little longer to open once you click on them in the menu, but they won't take up as much room on your flash memory. So that's good. I think they should do that with Virtual Console and a whole bunch of other stuff. I think that's actually a pretty good idea. But I don't think this precludes the possibility of some kind of hardware or SD card-based storage solution.
Well, there has to be something.
I think they're going to have to face the reality
Absolutely.
Of that. And probably they just weren't authorized to reveal their plans for that at GDC. And so they, you know, they basically said, well, there is nothing. But
I
still
disagree.
I
honestly believe Nintendo could be handling this stupid enough that they honestly think the SD card solution they've presented to us is generous enough they don't need to worry about it.
Well, I mean, that would be, to me, absolutely astonishing if they're that. Because you are cutting your nose off despite your face. You are all those impulse purchases of whether it be Virtual Console games, WiiWare, or downloadable widgets for your golf character or whatever else is going to be there in the future. You are going to cut off a big chunk of that revenue stream if you make it, you know, so relatively inaccessible by requiring people to muck around with an SD card. It doesn't make commercial sense when I'm sure they could come up with some god awful proprietary solution for this and gouge us all for that and we'll thank them for it.
Yep.
You know, I read this past week that the developers of the new Bionic Commando 2D game that's going to be coming out on Xbox Live Arcade, PC, and PlayStation Network, it's kind of a companion game to the new 3D Bionic Commando that Capcom is making in Japan. The developers of this downloadable version that looks like a high-res, like, 2D version of the original Bionic Commando, or the NES version, I should say, they were saying that the 360 Xbox Live Arcade version is going to be gimped a little bit because they ran up against the 150 megabyte size limit.
Yep, that's the same thing happened with Castlevania as well. Castlevania,
exactly.
Some of the sound is compressed.
Well, Castlevania essentially forced them to increase the size limit because there was just no way. It used to be 50 megabytes.
Yeah, which is not much
no
above WiiWare. WiiWare's 40, isn't it? So
yeah.
Oh, I haven't heard that. 40
yeah,
megabytes.
Yeah, that apparently is the limit. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, you can just imagine the complaints that developers are going to have about this. That's tiny compared to what they're used to doing. If you're planning on bringing over developers who do a lot of stuff for Live Arcade and PSN, they're going to be like, "Come on, give me a break." 40 megabytes? How are we supposed to do that? You know?
But you know what's interesting in all this is the fact that like the PS3 is slowly becoming the best platform for downloadable content. I mean, they're the only ones that have no restrictions or nothing. I mean, you can put whatever you want on there. I just think that's interesting.
Yeah, but there's not as much on there, is
yeah,
there?
Yeah, there's...
Oh, really? There. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm still excited about WiiWare.
Especially
all these new titles they're announcing. We still don't know much about what Nintendo themselves are going to do. You know, we got the stupid Pokemon Rancher thing, there's actually a lot of potential for some really cool stuff.
I desperately want to review Pokemon Rancher for the site. Just
you got it, buddy.
Well, Lindemann, make it happen.
I don't think it's going to be much to review.
That's why I want it.
It's such a non.
It seems like the kind of do you remember the Pokemon Box
Pokemon Channel?
For GameCube? Pokemon Box. It wasn't even a game. It was like a utility. It gave you extra storage space for
really?
Pokemon.
Oh, right. So you just
really?
Because I remember there was a.
Yeah, and also it helped you sort your Pokemon better than you could in the GBA games. It was like the most useless, bizarre thing.
Because I remember
there
was a game called Pokemon Channel, which got reviews of something along the lines of, oh, it helps with insomnia.
Right, yeah. No, that was something, that was like a mini game collection.
It wasn't even a mini game, it was Watch
Pikachu. The Pokemon Box
TV
was like a utility.
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty much a utility type of thing. Like I said, it's just so you can interact with your... I think you can put something like 1,000 of your Pokemon from your DS or something on there.
I'm just going to get it and then piss off Dalga for the entire review. That's just going to be my whole review. I'm just going to piss him off. Just going to do whatever it takes to piss him off. And I'm going to write like a narrative about pissing off a Pokemon that can stop the world from existing. That's going to be it.
Okay. All right, let's wrap up this show. That was our news segment. A lot of cool news from GDC.
Yeah.
Oh, Sakurai? Okay. So, yeah, Masahiro Sakurai, the director of Super Smash Bros. Brawl, he also had a GDC session. It was sort of a post-mortem on the game. And there wasn't a whole lot of news that came out of it, unfortunately. He did a couple of brief interviews with media outlets. And one of the things that came out was that I think Chris Kohler was asking him whether any other third parties other than Sega with Sonic and Konami with Snake asked if their characters could be included in Brawl, and he said no. And apparently the process for getting the characters in there was they had to be approached by the company, and then they worked out the details from there. And apparently none of the other companies, including Capcom, Mega Man, and Dante, and whatever else, no other companies were interested.
None of those other countries.
Still doesn't kind of
enough
explain the Konami. You know, they had approached them. You know, they had that sort of relationship between the creators there, and it didn't actually yield anything beyond Solid Snake. I mean, that could have yielded more, couldn't it? In that case,
it certainly could have. I mean, Simon Belmont and Solid Snake were in Dream Mix TV World Fighters, which was a really bizarre, obscure GameCube clone of Smash Brothers. I think it's really funny. It's definitely not as good as Melee. I mean, it's not even close. But it's fun for a couple of hours. I am a little shocked to see that Simon Belmont wasn't put in the game because he, like Snake, already has a history of being put into fighting games.
And he's
games.
Sort of rooted in Nintendo lore, you know, Captain N and all the rest of it. You know. But I think the most interesting most interesting thing that did come out of this was the fact that apparently the character roster was essentially set in July 2005.
Whoa.
Apparently that which is pretty much, from what I understand of what Sakurai said about the chronology of the game's development in the past, is right at the start. So they pretty the only late addition was Sonic. Sonic is the one guy that kind of was not thought of at that time, at the inception of the game's development. That I thought was quite interesting, that all these characters were kind of completely set in stone. Because you might have thought someone like, Wolf, was put in to pad out the roster late, but supposedly not.
Yeah, I don't know. Apparently Sakurai is like a huge Star Fox fan for all the wrong reasons.
He loves Landmasters.
Yeah. All right, that's the end of our show, and thanks for listening. Please keep sending that great reader mail to RFN at NintendoWorldReport.com. And last week, I asked all of our listeners to please tell someone, at least one person, about the podcast and get new listeners. So if you are one of those listeners who was prompted, solicited to listen from someone last week, I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you'll stick around. And please keep spreading the love. That's about all I've got to say. Thanks for coming, guys. Lindemann, Jones, Leahy, appreciate you doing
always
this every week, in and out. It's good to have you back, Lindemann.
Yep, very much so.
Lords of Thunder.
Well, I can't wait to end the show and go play Lords of Thunder. Who am I kidding?
Yeah, I'm going to play Kirby. So, that's it. Goodbye.
Later.
See you next week.
So long.
What's your name? What's your name?
Who's your daddy?